This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number three of VSiN Prime Time. Will Hill over there in Connecticut. I'm here at the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, I will be hosting with Matt Eumanns as we give you a NBA draft, NBA draft show, as the NBA draft live from the Barclays Center will be unfolding. And we hope to be cashing some tickets, and to help us cash said tickets right now, as a plethora of new props just got dropped on DraftKings about a half hour ago. A man who loves to scour the draft betting markets, it is Luke Swain. You know him on social media at Vegas Refund. So a whole lot going on. I just want to, before we dive into it, and you're going to hang around for a couple of segments, which we appreciate, Luke, how would you compare NBA draft betting versus NFL draft betting? Because we have this massive buildup for the NFL draft. It's talked about for months, and the NBA draft is like, oh, the season's over. Draft is Wednesday.
Right. Well, it'd be a little different if it didn't go to game seven, but it's totally different. I mean, it's just less mainstream. So there's just a lot less noise out there. And like, I think the biggest thing for me is just, it's a positionless league. Where in the NFL draft, you have to worry about quarterbacks going way earlier than what they should be. Where when we have the NBA, you just go off of the big boards. Best player available is a lot more in play compared to team need and positional value. But props probably dropped the latest they have this year. A lot just came out. And there's just a lot less noise. There's less people that you can focus on. And to me, it feels like the quote-unquote intel that the guys that we trust in the public space, like the Vicinis, Gavonis, is a little bit more accurate. But we'll see if that remains true tomorrow.
Well, all right, let's just start to put the puzzles together, the pieces of the puzzles together. Well, we know one, we know two, at least we think we do. Three, Philly. With knowing one and two, with Edgecombe the favorite, it would be pretty easy for the Sixers to reach out and say, hey, you're going to be there. You're our pick. We're not trading it. We're not picking somebody else. You're our guy. Reading the tea leaves sounds like they haven't done it. Could be they're just playing their cards close to the vest. Maybe they're looking elsewhere. Do you have a sense here what Philly's going to do here 24 hours from now?
So, man, like the Ace Bailey talk right now, like I'm glad the Durant talk is over, but the Ace Bailey talk, like I'm so over as well. It's kind of like talking about quarterbacks, like over under 2.5 quarterbacks, like it's how much I'm annoyed with it right now. But I will say, one, I don't think anyone knows. I think the Wizards are definitely going to be the furthest he goes. But that trade that just happened with the Celtics, which was the Celtics, the Hawks, and the Nets, to me, like whether it's there's ammo for a team like the Nets to trade into maybe the 3 or 4 slot for a guy that you would assume is Ace Bailey, which I think would like totally blow up, I guess, the order in a lot of bets, especially for people that have VJ to go 3, let's just say. But I guess the beauty, and this really only remains true with the NBA draft, is there's somewhat of like a consensus 7 to 8 guys right now. And if a trade like that happens, there's still the same 7 to 8 guys are going to go. Where if like a random guy in the NFL draft just jumps into the top 5, it's a lot more times than not, it's going to push guys back. Where if unless you have like exact picks, it would blow it up. But I think that trade is something to watch, because I mean, the Nets have like 5 first round picks right now. And they have the number 8 pick, which definitely puts them within striking distance.
Luke Swain joining us here at Vegas Refund is where you can find him on social media. There's a whole lot of over-under props, which we'll certainly get to. But one guy that we've seen the market move a little bit on and seems to be getting some buzz is Jeremiah Fears. His over-under was sitting at 7.5. It's now 6.5 at DraftKings. It's juiced slightly to the over. For him to go top 5 is plus 250. And once again, when you're betting into these markets, and Luke, I know you get in on them early, so at 6.5 or plus 250 to go top 5, what's the buzz on Jeremiah Fears? Do you think he could be a top 5 pick tomorrow night?
He definitely seems to have a ton of momentum into specifically the number 5 spot. And depending on who you listen to, whether it's Bill Simmons, who says he is not an Ainge type guy, or some expert saying that he is. Like, depending on you, who you talk to, you're going to get both sides of the coin, which makes it a little bit confusing. But it opened up at 7.5. At 6.5, if you asked me this a couple of days ago, I would say only be an over. But now I would only bet the under, where I think he is, from what I've read and listened to, he's not going to make it past 6. And 5 definitely seems to be catching momentum. I don't know what is, I think his exact odds to go 5 is plus 175, which I wouldn't touch that. But Fears to me is top 6 right now. I wouldn't lay top 5 odds though. So it'd be an under.
Another kind of pivot point for me for a couple reasons is the 10th pick with the Suns, just because it's a recent development that they get the 10th pick in the trade with Durant. A lot of markets, a lot of books have, will a player be top 10? And obviously if you go 10, that catches that. And then these books have exactly who's going to be the 10th pick. So there's a lot of betting implications from the 10th pick. Some steam today on Wolf. We've heard Derek Queen mentioned. We've heard, you know, the Thunder can move up and leapfrog and maybe get somebody at 9. The Raptors are interesting. So we'll just leave it at the 10th for now. What are you thinking? What are you feeling? How do the Suns approach this 10th pick? And they obviously wanted to get in here in the draft and move Durant so they can get a pick. What's your thought process on what Phoenix does here?
Yeah, 10 is definitely probably the biggest pivot point for a lot of bets because, I mean, I think there's 3 to 4 over-unders that are set at 11.5 by itself. Yep. And Derek Queen over 10.5 was my first over-under bet, and I was feeling fantastic about it up until that trade happens, which is something that you can't predict. But it's super interesting, the Derek Queen market right now, where everything you read, listen to in the mainstream media right now, he's definitely one of the guys being mentioned at number 10. But the markets are not agreeing whatsoever. I would have totally thought that the under would have gotten bet way more. Today it got bet a little bit, but then it came back on the over, which wasn't me. Don't know who it was, but the info is definitely going towards Queen, but the betting markets aren't agreeing. I think Queen obviously is in play. Murray Boyles, are the Suns like beat reporters and quote unquote experts. That's a guy that definitely seems to be, I guess, the top name at 10, then probably Carter Bryant, which all of their over-unders are within that range. And all three of those guys are probably the top three favorites. And I don't think, I mean, that is totally the pivot point. Like, my day is going to go north or south, depending on how that goes. So,
by the way, you want to know the power of Luke Swain when it comes to draft analysis. I'm looking at the board right now. You said Jeremiah Fears under 6.5, probably worth a look. It's moved now 25 cents since you've given that out here on the show here, Luke. So it's down to minus 130 to the under. So this draft market is just, it's just wild, man. Will, are you to blame for that, Will? Did you just fire out like a max bet on Jeremiah Fears under 6.5?
I did not, but since we have somebody with so much power, I mean, the way my brain thinks, maybe a little head fake, maybe you throw out something that's not necessarily, exactly, throw out something that's not necessarily true, get us a better number on it.
I do want to get your thoughts, Luke. We did see movement to the over based off, I don't know if it was just off of the report that the French product Noah Essengai is not going to play in his Bundesliga championship game. He's in the States. He's going to be going to the draft tomorrow. So he was at -$1.35 to the over, and he is now -$2 to the over. What would you do with that right now? Are you believing in this over movement here on Essengai?
Yeah, so he's one that he's an over that I've been looking at, and really Gavoni's like, I butcher his last name every single time, is the only guy that's had him at 9, and he's had him at 9 the entire time. Mm-hmm. And really I kind of treat what him, he's somewhat gospel to me in terms of like the core guys in terms of mockers. And I mean, he came over early. People are upset that he left the Germany team early when they're in the playoffs, which then Wasserman made a pretty good point that he came over maybe to get in a few quote-unquote interviews or workouts, which he hasn't been able to work out or see any teams up until this because he's still been playing. But it really – there's just – it's one that is like on paper is a total over. But when you read the tea leaves and the context of like let's just say mock drafts – he's always mentioned as a rumor to go 8 or 9, which to me isn't, it wasn't enough. The over definitely got bet today, and I agree with it. But I mean, there were more things coming out today where he had an interview. They were interviewing him, and he said he met with the Nets today, and he had great conversations with them, which if I was on the over and all this and I started seeing that, I would start sweating, which isn't something I want. But to me, it's over anything. But yeah, I mean, that's all I have to say. He's another pivot point that is crucial.
Last minute or so, and we can continue on the other side if you wish. The Thunder, do you buy this idea that they're trying to bundle, consolidate, and trade up? And if they do try to trade up, where and for who?
I am somewhat buying it. I think it would be for someone like Coward. I think Coward, like top 10 odds maybe, where, I mean, I don't know the history of the Thunder trading, but I do buy it. I mean, we've already seen 3 trades in the last like 3 days. Yeah. I do hate talking trades, but I do buy it. I think it could be someone for like Coward or big man like Behringer or maybe even Sorber.
Yeah, he is. That is certainly interesting. Sorber, interesting to note here, his odds of his over under has come down, the power forward out of Georgetown. So interesting to see those over under odds. Maybe they'll be reposted here in just a little bit. Luke is kind enough to hang out with us for another segment. A lot of over unders did just drop a little bit further down the board in the first round. We'll kind of pepper Luke with those and get some thoughts on anything that is bettable currently for the NBA draft as it comes around tomorrow night. We'll have a special here on VSiN Primetime starting at 7 p.m. Eastern. More with Luke Swain at Vegas Refund on the other side of the break.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's the eve of the NBA draft. Tim Murray here in Las Vegas. Will Hill over there in Connecticut. Luke Swain at Vegas Refund. Continuing our NBA draft coverage. Quick update from Cincinnati. The Reds have indeed tied things up against the Yankees. Our VSiN primetime game of the night. Top of the eighth inning. Reds and Yankees all tied at 3. We'll get you update on everything you need to know. Also, Stanford Steve going to join the program coming up in 15 minutes. But let's continue the draft talk as a lot of over-unders have been posted just about a half hour or so ago. And we've seen some significant line move. Look, if you're a college basketball fan, a couple of names that you're pretty familiar with are Danny Wolf of Michigan and Liam McNeely of UConn, both sitting at 21 and a half, Luke. Anything on those two that interests you, and what have we heard about McNeely and Wolf so far through this process?
Yeah, so Wolf went up like 30 minutes ago. He was available on other books, but he went up at 22 and a half and immediately got bet down at 21 and a half. He's definitely one that there's rumors for him all the way into the top 10, which like would be crazy, but he is, it seems like centers this year are going to go earlier. Like, whether it's because the league's going towards maybe more of a Twin Towers, two bigs lineups, but centers feel like they're getting dragged to the front of the draft this year, or whether you have size or big wings. And Wolf, to me, like on paper, if you just look at mocks, it probably would be an over. But when you read the tea leaves, there's too many rumors within the top 20. To bet the over, I would probably only bet the under on Wolf. It's not one I'm going to be betting right now. But if you had to, I would say the under. And then McNeely's one that opened up at 23 and a half. Seems like everyone's kind of 50-50 on him. I think he could go as high as maybe the Thunder or the Grizz at 15-16, which probably has some pretty crazy exact odds. But he's just a guy, I think, as we somewhat of a thin draft, as we get later to the 20s, that he's just going to be the best player available and he's just going to go. So I would probably lean the under on the McNeely for sure.
I heard someone today make the point, the first 8 teams, we know the 8 players, barring something completely, not miraculous, but completely unforeseen, 8 players are going to go in some order. And then at 9 at Toronto, it gets tricky. Do you agree with that? And what's your thought process on what Toronto might be thinking here with the 9th pick?
Yeah, I think it's seven probably. Where it's like, I think there's seven, and then the and then the eighth would be like Malawach, who's the center out of Duke. So I think Malawach isn't going to get past nine. Right now, six, eight, or nine are his sweet spot. And then maybe a guy like Kasparis or Essengay could jump into that top eight and have Malawach go to nine. But I agree that there's like a top eight. And then probably there's like four or five guys in the next tier. And then it really just gets chaotic. But I agree with that. This is a consensus top eight. And then probably Kasparis, maybe Essengay, Queen, Murray Boyles, probably, and then Carter Bryant are probably is the next tier.
When you look at a couple of the matchups, I know, you know, Liam McNeely against Rashear Fleming, that has moved pretty significantly toward McNeely at minus $4. You know, we were talking earlier today, and one guy that there are some folks that seem to be pretty high on Thomas Sorber out of Georgetown. He's in a matchup with Asa Newell from Georgia. Both are around that 16.5, 17.5 prop market. Any strong feel on that matchup, or is that properly priced at Sorber as a slight favorite at minus $1.25?
Well, it's interesting because Asa's over-under is 16.5 and Sorber's is 17.5, but Sorber's favored, which that's a draft market for you. And I would say I think Sorber has a higher floor, but Asa has a higher ceiling. So I think these odds are fair.
Okay.
To me, I'm on the under Sorber, which was at 18.5. Asa at 16.5, I think is fair. But Sorber feels more locked in to go in the top 17 than Asa. So I think he definitely should be favored.
What is something right now, and this might be an unfair question because you don't have the odds board right in front of you. I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but what is something right now where somebody's listening and says, hey, I have no bets, but I want a little action on it, and I want a lotto ticket. I want something that's, you know, 8-1, 10-1, 30-1. What's something that's improbable? It has long odds, but you, in your mind, it could actually get home.
So as we're talking, DraftKings is loading up picks 11 through 20. So they have 11 through 15 up. They have picks 16 up. We're waiting for 16 or 17, 18, 19, 20 to go up. It's delayed, but like the header says 11 through 20. I think if you want to have fun and hit some long odds, that's probably where you want to go. I would say Berenger to go 14, which I think is plus 750, is a good bet. I think if you start looking further, and it's actually probably great talking about this now, in terms of odds that are coming that aren't out yet. I would say, Walter Clayton Jr. has been talked about a lot for the Heat. Finkelstein was on today talking about how Walter Clayton Jr. worked out with the Heat twice and then canceled all of his workouts after. He's from Florida. And it seems like a promise scenario. And then all of a sudden you start seeing all the mocks from the Vicinis, the Gavonis, the Finkelsteins, the guys that matter, putting them at 20. And for me, I have them top 20 from a while back. It's probably my biggest buying an island bet if he does go top 20. But when top 20 odds come out, if Walter Clayton to go 20 is anything like, let's just say 3-1 or better, I think that would be a good one. Berenger or Sorber to go 17, whatever those odds are, I would say probably anything 6-1, 6-1 or better would be good. Long shots, DK, they're definitely getting better at this. I'll give them that. But maybe someone like Essengay falling. So he's a guy that he's trending at like 8 or 9. But if he doesn't go 8 or 9, finding a place for him is tough. And guys like Vicini haven't fallen to 18, which he might not even be listed to go 18. But that would be crazy to me. But that would be like the buying an island banger that you would call home for. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it. So Sorber 17, Berenger 14, Walter Clayton 20, I think are good ones to look out for.
Luke Swain
maybe 16.
Okay, McNeely, Liam McNeely going 16 potentially. At Vegas Refund is where you can find Luke Swain. Luke, as we look at to be drafted in the first round, there's a lot of favorites. You know, that's not a two-way market, so it you know, they can kind of juice them up to try to dissuade you from going. You know, the back end of the first round could be kind of wacky, right? There could be promises made. There could be teams, you know, just drafting a guy and stashing him. Anyone in that first round to be drafted in the first round market that is of interest to you? You're starting to see, you know, some names that you might know, whether it be Ryan Kalkbrenner out of Creighton is now $1.30. John A. Broome out of Auburn is -110. Adu Thiro out of Arkansas is -105. Anyone jump out to you in the to be drafted in the first round market?
Man, DraftKings just like changed the entire menu. Sorry, taking me a second. It's like, it's wild. But I'm here. So I think with the first round market, one, you can parlay them, which whether you want to reduce the juice on a heavy favorite, remember these are fake odds. So like Hugo Gonzalez shouldn't be -330. But you can reduce the juice by parlaying, which I think is probably the best way to go about it. But Ben Seroff, if that's how you pronounce his last name, he was one trending this morning, and then he played today in the German league. He only put up like 6 points, where like I don't think one game should keep someone out of the first round in terms of momentum. Seroff, maybe you could probably with someone. Kalkenbrenner, super connected to the Celtics right now. But really, in the NBA draft, like the consensus is like way stronger in this sport than – let's just say NFL or NHL. So like really like the top 30 to 32, 34 guys like are just going to go depending the order. And like the long shots, like the Caleb Love is 14-1. He should probably be like 100-1. I don't think the first round bets in terms of plus money are where you're going to go. You want to like parlay maybe a Kalkenbrenner and Hugo or a Kalkenbrenner and Maxine.
Okay.
Something like that.
Cool. Hey, Luke, you're the man. You do the homework out there. He's got a spreadsheet available. If you want to grab it, shoot him a note. He's at Vegas Refund. Luke, best of luck with the bets, man. Appreciate the insight.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
There he is. Good stuff there. Thanks, always Luke. From Luke Swain, and makes you get the gears going when it comes to the NBA draft. The rain is coming down in Cincinnati. 3-3 is the score, bottom of the eighth inning. That's Will Hill. I'm Tim Murray. Let's talk to Stanford Steve from ESPN. He'll join us on the other side of the break. It is VSIN Primetime.
VSIN Primetime on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
We keep it rolling here on VSIN Primetime. How about this, Will Hill? The Colorado Rockies leading the Dodgers 2-0 in the bottom of the third inning. And right now, if you wanted to jump in on the Dodgers on that live line, you can get plus money on the Dodgers against the Rockies in the third inning.
The Rockies over-under wins for June was 9.5. They are sitting on 9. I have the under. I'm almost rooting for the Rockies to win and just put me out of my misery. Just get it over with. Rip the Band-Aid off now. Let's just get it over with. Thank you, Marlins. Thank you, Nationals. Thank you, Giants, who couldn't hold an 8-2 lead late. Let's just get it over with. Let's let them win the game, and I don't want to look at it in my account anymore.
Bottom of the eighth inning, Reds and Yankees all tied up at 3, and we will head to the ninth inning there. All right, let's head back to our progressive guest line and bring on a friend of the show, one and only Stanford Steve, who you'll see later tonight with Scott Van Pelt there on SportsCenter. You know, we're going to bounce all over the place here. We were talking a little NBA draft just a moment ago. You guys will be on after the draft tomorrow night. You're a big college hoop guy. So when you look at the draft, who are some of the players that you're just excited to see at the next level? If we remove the obvious of a Cooper Flag.
I'm actually really excited for this draft, guys. I think the combination of youngsters and older guys that show they could play, I think college basketball has turned into a fascinating game of how guys are mixed, you know, coaches are mixing youth with veterans. You know, I heard an interview with Steve Peichel talking about how, you know, Ace Bailey's not going to turn, I think he said 18 or 19 till August. You know, he's a kid who set the record for freshman points in a Big Ten game. So I actually like it. I think Malawach is a fascinating player from Duke, the big guy, where he goes, the way he's able to switch on screens defensively. That's what this league has turned into. You saw the Thunder try and get Miles Turner in as many switches as possible. You saw the Pacers try to attack Hardenstein and Chet, and Chet ended up being great when they needed him late in games as the series wore on. So I like a ton of them. I mean, the guy that I really like is Cowherd. Yeah. Nobody knows him. His story is incredible. You know, he started with two D3 offers. The only reason he went to Eastern Washington was because that coach who became his coach at Washington State played in that league in Fresno, you know, when he was playing. So, yeah, Cowherd's a guy I think that not a lot of people know or have seen because he only played six games this year, but he's got plenty of ability.
Steve, you were in the building the other night, Game 7. You've been lucky enough to be at a lot of these big-time sporting events. Where does Game 7 rank the other night on weirdest events? Everything with Halliburton getting hurt. Seemed like OKC had a letdown. Then eventually they pull away and win the championship. Was it as strange as it was watching on TV? And if we gave you truth serum, how do you think that game plays out had Halliburton not gotten hurt?
Yeah, I mean, Scott and I got there, and Game 6 was the I would say the climax of the series. In Indiana. I mean, they brought it. I had a feeling we were going back to OKC the whole time, just knowing how special Indiana could be. I kept referencing the game five back in the day against Kobe and the Lakers, where they beat the Lakers by 30. That's a passionate fan base, man. And they brought it. But then being the loudest warmups I've ever seen in game seven, like I could feel it in my feet. Scott was saying how he could feel it in his chest pregame. And then you see Halliburton come on and be like, you know what? I'm here. And Legler is just talking about being in games like that. You're like, he knew he was feeling something special, maybe more special than anybody on the court. And yeah, there was a lull because people didn't know how to process it. You know, they're not showing that replay in the arena of Halliburton. You see him banging on the floor, but like you had to go back to the replay screen and we're running back. And then our offices were right by the Pacers. They were super confident at halftime. That's a team that's, you know, adapted to every single possible scenario through this run, but they just didn't have enough, you know, at the end. You know, we all love TJ. He was sensational in the series, but they ended up taking advantage of him. You know, he had seven turnovers, and that was OKC's bread and butter, is turn turnovers into points, and they did that in that third quarter run. They're the best third quarter team, the best home team in the league, and it showed out. And it was I was kind of happy. Because I love the way OKC treated the regular season as opposed to these other teams that were trying to, you know, get a better lottery pick, where they went out every night and gave it to teams. So I was happy that they won. I thought the best team did win the title. But yeah, the Halliburton thing was crazy because he was feeling it. And, you know, they got it to 10 in the fourth, and that's a totally different feeling if they're down 10 in the fourth with him healthy on the court. You know that.
Yeah, it's just wild, Steve. And now we're seeing, you know, the kind of aftermath of all of this situation where you're seeing Boston making these moves to get under, you know, the. You know, the cap, $180 million yeah. saved. So, you know, it's funny. I'm curious to get your thoughts because we had Jeff Sherman on from the Westgate Superbook, and he said, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to buy in on the Philadelphia 76ers. And they're kind of fascinating, right? Because they have the 3 pick next year. You know, you look at, can you trust Embiid and all of that? But at 12-1 to win the East, 35-1 to win the title, they're kind of a, is this a buy low spot on the Philadelphia 76ers, Steve? Because who the heck knows what the East is going to look like next year?
Yeah, no. That, to me, guys, the team that I look at, I think Milwaukee's got to keep Giannis now.
Yeah, they're not
they
trading them.
Like, look at the path now. I mean, Orlando's a team I would look at. But I look at, you know, I thought Giannis was going to be the story of the offseason. They can't let him go now. This is the best path they'll have since he's been there, and that includes a title that they won. So I look at Milwaukee as a team. Philly, I'm not a fan of anything in the city of Philadelphia, so it's going to get me upset to talk about just after the Phillies gave it to my Mets, and they're going the right way, and the Mets can't, you know, get it out now with the bullpen these last couple of weeks, and the pitching's a problem. So Phillies, I still think they hold the keys, right? Because everybody says it's a two-player draft. Everybody knows what's going to happen with the two picks, assuming Harper goes two. But I wouldn't put it away that Philly, you know, does something to try and mix things up, knowing that their spot there they are very coveted, and you know the clock is ticking with the Embiid thing, the whole thing. I mean, the McCain injury. Who the hell knows what Paul George is going to be? But that's a fascinating. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be any lower because they're going to try and improve themselves as soon as they can.
All right, Steve, you brought it up. You Mets fans are an optimistic bunch. I know that. We know you guys are always looking glass half full. That being said, is that optimism being tested? Up 3-0 tonight. Montas gives you good performance. Next thing you know, you're down 5-3. Is this just, hey, it's baseball, it's 162, lull in a long season, or are there deeper issues here with this Mets team?
No, there's issues for sure. Well, when you look at it, I didn't have a problem. Everybody's making a big deal about Soto not, you know, producing early on. I was like, I don't care. They're winning the games. That's all that matters there. I don't care, you know, who's gelling or what he looks like early in the year. So when you look at it now with the pitching being the issue, Senga was so good and valuable, and they lose him because Pete Alonso can't play first base. Jeff McNeil's in center field. Like, I wish we could start three DHs, but we can't. So they got a lot of things to iron out. Defensively, they have not been good at all. Hopefully Vientos coming back could look like what he looked like late last year, as he was a team that carried a lot of the onus, as did Lindor. So yeah, they have plenty to iron out. And I swear, if Atlanta's going to keep doing this, and they're going to be in the playoffs, that's just a disaster, because the Mets can't win there for anything to save themselves.
Where's the optimism meter at right now?
0.5.
All right, before I let you run, I know you're not knee deep yet into your college football prep work. You'll be on College Game Day, of course, this upcoming fall. Final minute, Steve, quarterback that intrigues you the most right now?
Oh, Marcell Reed, Texas A&M.
Ooh, okay, I like that.
I believe he's got the goods. That's the thing, guys, is now this year we got a ton of ton of quarterbacks that have been in the program that are at the top of these supposed rankings. And Marcell's good, is really, really good. Their schedule is daunting, but I think they're the only team that can beat Notre Dame. Ooh. On Notre Dame's schedule.
All right. You don't think you're not buying the Carson Beck love, huh? I'll be there.
No. We know.
Hey, Steve, get back to work, man. We appreciate you jumping on.
All right, boys. Have a good night.
There he is. Stanford Steve. You'll see him later tonight on ESPN with Scott Van Pelt. So we appreciate him jumping on there. And make sure to listen to their podcast, SV Pod. I find myself laughing out loud listening to their podcast on a regular basis. I don't know if you saw the picture that Steve took of Van Pelt on the plane. He had like a blanket draped over his whole body on their flight, I think, home from Indianapolis over on the weekend. All right. Jonathan Givony just put out a new mock draft. We'll take a look at that. Ooh. We also have updated odds. And wouldn't you know it, the Dodgers have tied things up against the Colorado Rockies. You snooze and you lose. I could have got plus dollars on the Dodgers just a little while ago. It is VSiN Primetime.
The Sports Betting Network.
All right, let's get updated on baseball. And, you know, we had Stanford Steve on. We didn't want to be rude, but I had mentioned, you know, the Rockies are up 2-0, and the Dodgers in the third inning are plus money to beat the Rockies. Will Hill, would you like to update the people on the current score from Coors Field?
maybe the most predictable five-run rally, 5-2 turnaround in the history of baseball. The Dodgers now lead 5-2, five runs here in the fourth. Should have seen it come. And sometimes I feel like I'm too hard on myself. We're too hard on ourselves just in general as bettors. You know, you don't bet something, it wins. You beat yourself up. You bet something, it wins. Yeah, I wish I had bet more on it. This is one where passing on it, I actually feel like an idiot because they're down 2-0. They're plus money, 2-0. In and now it's 6-2 as the Angels continue to crush Colorado. This is one 2-0 lead in Colorado is nothing for that offense with that hitting environment. You know they're going to find their way to, you know, 6, 7, 8 runs, something like that. So the two runs, it's almost like being down 2-0 in a basketball game. That was a missed opportunity. You know, who knows? Maybe the Rockies score 7 runs next inning, and you know we're sitting here feeling foolish for regretting it for not pulling the trigger. But this is one that, man, certainly wish we pulled the trigger. This was on a silver platter for us. Plus money, only a 2-run deficit. The Dodgers, man, that was a tough one. Even before the game, what did I say? It was 220, 230. I was like, man, that's pretty cheap for a Rockies-Dodgers game.
Yeah, you definitely said it was a cheap price. And lo and behold, now it's 6-2, and they ain't done yet there in the top of the fourth inning. We're headed to extra innings in Cincinnati. 3-3 is the score. This was our VSiN primetime game of the night, and boy, did it deliver. First 5 innings, Chase Brown, 5 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs. All of them came in the fourth inning, and he had 8 strikeouts, Will Hill. What a performance we saw from Chase Brown, the rookie phenom there, second overall pick just a year ago, and the Reds tied the game up with 3 runs in the seventh, a bases-clearing double, and that is where we stand heading into the final inning there. How about the Tigers and A's? Tarik Skubal, 8 strikeouts. I believe his over-under was 8.5. So it did go under, yes, at least one shop that I saw. So Skubal, a little bit roughed up early on, gave up 2 runs in the first, 2 runs in the second, calmed down, ended up going 6 innings, gave up 4 runs, 8 hits there. Tigers lead 7-4 in that one. One other one, as we note, Braves continuing to add to their lead here. They scored 5 runs in the 6th, Will. They've scored 1 here in the 8th, and the Braves now up 6-3 on the Mets.
Tough for the Mets. They finally got a good pitching performance from a starter. Montas, of all people, who got hammered in the minor leagues in 6 rehab starts, 6 ERA. You throw him in there against the Braves, he was absolutely dominant through 5 shutout innings. The bullpen coughs it up right away, and it's now a 6-3 lead for Atlanta. Like you mentioned, this Mets team continues to slide here. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, 2 weeks ago, I think it was, where they're up 5, 5.5 games on Philly. You know, they're beating up on Washington. Pitching looks great. Now, Senga's hurt. McGill's hurt. The bullpen has regressed. The starting pitching hasn't been great. I mean, just everything has gone wrong with them, and they continue to get beaten up here by Atlanta. We had Stanford Steve on last segment. He is not up to, what did he put his optimism meter at? Was it a 0.5?
That's, yeah. Now it is worth noting he is historically pessimistic there with his optimism meter when they do it on SportsCenter. But another run is going to be home here, as it looks like a double has just brought in another one. So the Braves are taking the Mets to task right now. 7-3 is the score at Citi Field. So I want to get to this, and a new mock draft is out, and I do think there's actually some bettable information in here, and I want to get to it regarding Noah Essengai. So this was the draft prospect here. We have the tweet from NBA Central. NBA draft prospect Noah Essengai will miss the remainder of the German League Finals to attend the NBA draft ceremony, per Basket News sources. ULM or Ulm, I'm not exactly sure. That's the team he plays for. Currently leads Bayern Munich 2-1 in the best of 5 German League Finals. Game 4 scheduled for June 24th. Meanwhile, fellow draft prospect Ben Sarif has remained with the team during the finals. So there is an interesting nugget that I want to read to you from Jonathan Givony. So if you missed it, Luke Swain was on, Will, and what did he say regarding Jonathan Givony? He said he kind of utilizes him almost as gospel when it comes to the NBA draft. Essengai to be a top 10 pick is minus 115. Those odds shifted today because of that news, right? This is what he said regarding Essengai. Essengai's pre-draft officially started on Sunday when he departed Ulm following Game 3 of the German League playoffs, landing in Toronto for a secret private workout before flying to New York City for the Green Room Participants Media Day. He's also expected to meet with the Nets while in New York City and picked up significant interest from the Suns, who could very well select him should he fall to number 10. Who were the three teams that he mentioned? Toronto, Brooklyn, and Phoenix. 8, 9, 10. Will, minus 115 is his price to be a top 10 pick. I think that's worth a bet. Just reading what Jonathan Givony just put out there. And he didn't say he could slip past. He said Phoenix could be picked up significant interest
right.
should he fall to number 10. And his current price is minus 115 to be a top 10 pick. So I think the smoke today maybe has gone a little bit too far. And if you read it, looks like Essengai to be a top 10 pick might be worth a look there. FanDuel's minus 125 and DraftKings is minus 115.
I'm trying to find it now because in some of these books will take stuff down overnight because they don't want to get beat on for information. Essengai was one guy that everyone seemed to like over the 9.5 at the player position thing. 8 players for 8 spots. The only way this loses on the under is if he goes 9 because – you know, like we talked about, there's 8 specific guys for the first 8 teams, and a lot of people didn't think he would crack that. I know Drew Dintic, who's really good covering this stuff, Whale Capper, he was of that belief. And one thing that was not in this report about him leaving the team, because these guys are very, you know, they want to get information from the agents, they want to put things out there, but they don't want to step on toes. I guess this kid was averaging like 2 or 3 points a game for his team and playing like 12 or 13 minutes. He wasn't really much of a factor, which, you know, maybe he's just not that good. Again, I wouldn't know this guy if he fell on me. So I understand. And the Givony thing makes me rethink it. I see the other side of it here where there's some people that think over 9.5 is the play. He's not that good. There's a team aspect of him leaving. I don't know. So I get where you're coming from with yes, top 10 pick. But you know, he's got to be careful when it's not a two-way market. You can bet yes, he can be a top 10 pick, but I don't believe you can bet the no on a top 10 pick. So right away, they're going to scalp you pretty good in terms of the odds.
Yeah, no doubt. And looking at his over-under, I believe it had shifted today pretty significantly to the over. It was minus 135 over earlier today, and then that report came out and it moved to minus $2. A couple other notes from the Givony mock draft that just came out. The one player that kind of keeps dropping is Trey Johnson. Trey Johnson, the sharpshooter out of Texas, Will, says Johnson has been viewed by many teams as having a somewhat narrow band of landing spots between number 4 and 6, but there are realistic scenarios like this one where he slips out of that group. Here, Fears moves into the top 5. Bailey makes it to what appears to be a potential landing spot in Washington. Johnson slides to number 8. So that's kind of that jumbled mess, what ultimately happens. But Jonathan Givony in his most recent mock that just dropped moments ago has Trey Johnson dropping to number 8. And Jeremiah Fears, who we had Rob Doster on earlier in the show,
right,
and he felt like at plus 250 for Fears to be a top 10 or top 5 pick was worth a bet. That's moved down to plus 225 as Givony does have Jeremiah Fears, the point guard out of Oklahoma, going with the 5th pick to the Utah Jazz.
You have it in front of you. I know we're running up against a break. Do you want to? Should we save it for the next? Because I want to hear all these picks. I want to hear what Givony has, because, and we'll save it for the next break. But I feel like, and this applies to football too, the last mock Jeremiah in the NFL, the last mock the night before, and these guys put out, you know, dozens, some of them throughout the process. The last one is usually the most accurate because it's late breaking information. It's the most accurate information is the most recent one. So, Givony's kind of like the Jeremiah here of the NBA. So I'm very curious to hear what his top 10 looks like.
All right, we will get to that. We will also chat with Brian Barrett to give us the latest on all of the moves that the Boston Celtics are making. So we'll get to Brian Barrett also on the other side of the break. That's Will Hill. I'm Tim Murray. By the way, our VSiN primetime game of the night still tied at 3 in the top of the 10th inning. Hey, if you want to bet smarter this football season, VSiN Pro can help you out. Our NFL betting guide drops next week, and you can get our football special for just $175. That's VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl. Head on over to VSiN.com/subscribe.